Welcome to the Golf Industry Uncut. On-demand audio for the world of golf like never before. Exclusively on THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Network. Now, here's your host, JB.
Welcome, everyone, to THP Radio. I'm your host, JB, and today we have a new episode and a special episode of the show sweeping the on-demand talk radio world called the Golf Industry Uncut. We're kind of live from Toulon Design, and each episode of Uncut will feature one of the brilliant minds of the golf industry, and they'll be placed on the hot seat to discuss equipment, technology, and the entire golf industry landscape. Today, like we said, we're live, we're sitting in front of each other. We have Sean Toulon from Toulon Design on the show. Are you ready to step onto the hot seat?
I am so ready for this, JB. Let her rip.
THP Radio is your new twist on on-demand audio in the world of golf, and the Golf Industry Uncut is your complete access to the equipment world that you're craving the info on. The way the show works is easy. We press the record button. As I warned Sean beforehand, there's no cutting, there's no editing, there's no nothing. You ready?
I am ready.
First question.
All right.
You know, your name is a little synonymous for those that follow the golf industry, but some of our listeners don't.
Right.
How did you get started in the golf business, and can you give our listeners kind of a timeline that led to Toulon Design?
Yeah, sure. I'll try to go quick because it's been
a long time. No, take your time.
I started as a caddy when I was 12 years old and learned the game from my dad, and not only did I fall in love, Josh, with the game of golf, but I loved golfers and, you know, the way they carried themselves, the way they spoke, the way they interacted with one another, the way they dressed. And anyways, I just decided at age 12, I wanted to be a golfer. And as I grew up in the golf business from a caddy to an assistant golf professional and a teaching professional and all of that, and then as a TaylorMade sales rep, I just loved everything about it. The people in the game, the industry, equipment, all of it. I just became a junkie.
Now, that was still back in Wisconsin.
Right.
Where you worked for TaylorMade.
Right.
Then you moved out here.
I did.
And what was the transition, obviously a culture shock, but what was the transition timeline and jobs?
Well, I was fortunate enough, for some reason, Gary Adams, the founder of TaylorMade, took me under his wing. I had his old territory, and I did a really good job as a territory rep back in Wisconsin and Minnesota. And Gary just became my mentor. And I used to just listen to him and watch him, and I wanted to be like him. And he was this incredible thinker. He was kind. He was generous. He was awesome. And I just decided at some point I wanted to have my own company. So I moved out here. I actually left TaylorMade and joined Eddie Langert, who was another founder of the company, to come out here and work at Langert Golf with Mark King and another guy named Paul Herber. So that was really, I did that because I loved Eddie, but I wanted to learn more about the inside of a company, supply chain, how you design, all of those things. And Eddie really left the three of us, me, Paul Herber, and Mark King, pretty much run the company, and we were really young. So that was a cool start.
Now, that takes an interesting turn, and right around that time is when Zevo came about.
Right. So I always had a couple of friends, wealthy guys. One was in the car business, another was an oil guy from Houston that wanted to start a golf company at some point. And they kept asking me, are you ready yet? Are you ready yet? Are you ready yet? And I kept saying, no, I'm not ready. I'm not ready. I'm not ready. And then finally, I was ready. I thought I was. And Zevo Golf was born in 1992. I was smart enough to found that on April 1st, April Fool's Day.
Of course,
1992. And we did a really good job. We built that company up to about $20 million in sales. I sold it before it got really big. And we did nice. And I'm proud of the job that we did there, not just for my investors who did well, but we did really cool stuff in custom fitting before it was really sort of even in vogue. I would say we were probably a little ahead of our time, Josh, but I'm proud of the work that we did there, and we did a really good job.
That led to TaylorMade.
It did.
Back to TaylorMade.
It did.
And you held a lot of different jobs there, and we don't have to go through each and every one of those. But can you tell our listeners how long you were there?
Sure.
And what was kind of the culmination? What were you doing at the end?
Yeah. So, well, I was really pretty much doing the same thing the whole time. So I got a call from Mark King to come back to the company in late 1999, and I joined the company. And I am a sort of a big believer in fate, and this can be difficult for me to get through this without getting emotional, but I really believe Mark wanted me to come back and run product, and Gary was dying of pancreatic cancer, and you know, he was honestly a hero to me, and I came back to the company on January 2nd, 2000, which was the day after Gary died. So one of the things that I always felt was sort of my calling was, you know, not just to help TaylorMade become the best performance golf brand in the world, which meant we had to do the best products for the best players, but I also wanted to make sure that Gary's legacy was kept alive inside the company, and I wanted to work with Mark. So I left after 17 incredible years of being executive vice president and responsible for all the products. I think my name is on over 80 patents, and you know, the products in pretty much all categories became, you know, the best selling, the most used, the most tournaments won. I mean, so we, and obviously it's a big team over there, so it certainly wasn't a one-man show, Sean Toulon, that I can promise you, but I got,
and we're going to get to that in a little bit about the different team members you've had, yeah, and the products you've been a part of.
We had great team members there, and but the body of work that we did there, I think, is unprecedented. Of course we made some mistakes, and probably in retrospect maybe did a little bit too much too soon too fast, but it was incredible. It was an incredible run that we had, and that company is alive and well, and you know, they're going through, as companies go through, a business cycle, and they're going to come out of that shining for sure. And anyways, they're going to be just fine.
And here we are.
Yeah.
We're sitting in your office. Our readers / listeners got a tour of that office.
Right.
You showing everybody your OCD cleanliness and got to see the family and everything else. And people are talking. And
they are.
I know that when we spoke right before the PGA show and then again at the PGA show about this,
right,
you didn't know if they'd be talking. You kind of had something cool,
right?
But you didn't know if they'd be talking, and they are.
Right.
Tell us where this came from.
Well, the fear was really, gosh, what if you throw this big party and nobody shows up, right? So
been there.
Yeah. So thankfully, that's not happened. I retired last year, almost a year ago, 1st of July, and I came home, I don't know, on the 4th or the 5th, and Tony and Joey, two of my three boys, said, Dad, are you really going to retire? And I said, well, I think so. Well, what do you, why do you ask? And they're the ones that came up with the idea of looking into the golf business. And do you think there's room for another putter company? And I said, you know, guys, I don't know. I know one thing for sure. There's not room for another average one. There's not room for another good one. But there's always room, always, for something that's extraordinary. Always. You know, you go, if you look at restaurants, there's enough Italian restaurants, right? But the extraordinary ones, even the new ones, are busy. So if it can be extraordinary, if we can really do things in a totally new, fresh, and different way, I think there's always a room and a place for that. So anyways, we looked and studied and did our homework and came up with this concept, and so far so good.
Now, we talked briefly about, you know, you've been involved with a lot of products. Yeah. You had a pretty good team. You've designed or been part of the team that has designed some of the biggest selling and most influential equipment in the last, I'd say, 3 decades.
Right.
Right around there.
Yeah.
Taking the obvious of Toulon design out of the equation.
Right.
Because I knew that would be the easy answer. Can you give our listeners one or two that you loved?
Yeah.
And
I can
then
give, go ahead.
After that,
yep.
Can you give us one or two that you didn't really love, but people seem to like it and gravitate towards?
Yeah. I can do it all. So I'm going to go to about five if I can. So,
yeah, we got all the time you need.
300 series was incredibly important. And that was the realization there, as I wrote the product plan, was kind of one size fits none. And at the time, there were really three drivers that were doing well in the marketplace. There was a Titleist 975D. There was the Callaway driver, I can't remember which exact one, and there was a Ping driver, the Ty SI. And if you looked at the launch conditions that each one of the three really produced for a golfer, they were totally different, and there were pods of golfers that would fit large ones into each one. So the world was expecting TaylorMade to come up with a new driver, and I sat down with Mark and Benoit and some of the other guys and said, hey, I think we got to throw them a curveball, and we need to do a better version of all three of those. And so we need to come out with three, not one, and shake things up a little bit. And I'm telling you, it put us on the map so fast. We became the number one play driver on tour in a few months, the number one winning driver. And that really sort of signaled, I think, to the world that TaylorMade could be really different.
So that's one.
That's one. Sorry, I'll go quicker.
No, you have all the time you need. our listeners are going to enjoy this.
R7 quad was really born on, I know the date, on January 11th, 2000 is when I wrote the plan for the 300 series. And I remember writing down on the sheet of paper that the reason why we need three is because a given driver is only capable of producing one set of launch conditions. That's why we needed a 300, a 320, and a 360. And as soon as I wrote that, it was the light bulb moment, just the cliched, but I'm telling you, it happened, is like, well, what if a driver was capable of producing more than one launch condition? And that was the beginning of the development of the R7 quad, goes all the way back there, which, so if you were going to have one driver that the user was going to be able to adjust with a wrench, and you have to move the CG. And if you're going to move the CG, you have to move weight. So we came up with the most bitching lead tape idea of all time, which was these four weights that could move far enough. And it's more important that you move weight a certain distance than it is how much the weight actually is, just the way the math works. And so R7 was born. And I mean, there were pictures in the paper of AP photos of Lee Westwood with his Ping hat on, with a weight in his mouth and a wrench at Wentworth when we launched. Steve Flesh was a Cleveland guy, and he went on the air telling everybody, I got this new TaylorMade driver. And Frank Nablo was talking about it, and he was representing another company. I mean, just the stuff that happened, it exploded. So that was number two. That was probably the most important thing, because it took TaylorMade into this level of innovation and creativity that hadn't been seen before. The burner driver, which I think we sold about 500 million
pieces.
Does
that go all the way back to the bubble shaft? Or?
No, the one that came out in 2007, which was really cool.
Yeah. Because our tour was big too.
It was really big. And we did a really clever thing that actually I did with Harry Arnett when Harry was back there.
Yeah, you've had a good group of people come through.
It's unbelievable. And believe me, that's, you know, one guy doesn't do all the great things for sure. So, but Harry and I really worked together to bring this idea of bomber and technician, which was, if we could really dig into the psychographics of a golfer more than the demographics, and some golfers want to hit the ball as far as they can, and there were a lot of guys on tour that played that way, and then we had guys like Retief Goosen or Sergio at the time. Mike Weir is the best example, probably super articulate guys that kind of shape their ball. So if we decided we'd start to look at designing clubs really for the way they thought and the way that they saw themselves. So way more psychology into just the performance of it. And that was this whole idea of the R7 Super Quad was this ultra-tunable technician's driver. And then you had this thing that you could just, you know, just rear back and wail on a burner and you would be okay. That was massive, because that took the company and it exploded it. Then you have, of course, have the white driver, the R11, and rocket balls.
So I have a story for you about a white driver, and we're going to get sidetracked, but, you know, it's my show.
It is.
I have a friend at a different golf company. Yeah. He's not there anymore, so it's not a big deal. And he left the industry. And about 10 years ago, he went out to the parking lot with one of their drivers and spray-painted it white.
Yeah.
And he's from a tennis background, and they had gone to the white racket.
Yeah.
I think Yonex did.
Right.
And he brought it into the president. And the president said, he said, we have a really big tour staff right now. Wouldn't this be a great thing? They'd all be seen on TV and everybody would know they were playing our club. And the president said, that's the dumbest idea I've ever heard. And then like 6 years later, and he never mentioned it to anybody.
Right.
Never said a word
that's
to anybody.
So funny.
6 years later, you guys did it, and it was up there with the best marketing I'd ever seen in any line of consumer good.
Yeah, I think so. And then I think the work that at that time Harry and Bob Maggiore did on bringing that whole thing to life and all of the experiential
things. That was
impressive
stuff.
They did. It was unbelievable, and took the world by storm. But you know, then you know, you'd see the head cover come off of Luke Donald's bag or driver, and oh my gosh, that's a white driver. That's a TaylorMade driver. He's under contract to somebody. And, you know, people don't understand all the contracts and how they work. But all of a sudden, we had all these guys that really weren't TaylorMade guys, obviously playing a TaylorMade driver. What that did is we didn't have any more drivers in play. We had 65 in play and, we, you know, pretty much did all the time. But when you see 65 of them and almost all of them are white, the PGA Tour looked like a TaylorMade sales meeting. It was incredible. So that was huge. And I just want to say two other things.
Sure.
The spider putter, which was sort of one of those things that I'll take a little shot at Mark, because I showed him the spider putter, which was just one of those things that when I saw it and was part of the team developing it, I just said, this thing is a massive hit, massive hit. And I went in and showed it to Mark, and he said to me, he says, that's one of the worst products you've ever done. And I said, well, Mark, on this one, I think that would define diametrically opposed, because I literally think it's one of the best. He says, well, then go see if you can get it and play on tour. And they freaked out for it. They went crazy. We had forecasted to sell about 10,000 units that year. We sold 300,000 units. So King missed on that one.
So we've talked about some of the big successes.
Yeah.
What are some that you looked at and either they did well and you couldn't quite understand it?
Yeah.
Or you just didn't think it was there.
Yeah. Well, I'll give you one that way exceeded our expectation, and then I'll give you a blunder. So the one that was crazy was Rescue.
I've had Hofi on this show,
yeah,
and he talked about that, and he's like, it wasn't a great golf club, and you guys had a forecast that was very low and 10 times that.
Yeah. I would respectfully disagree with it wasn't a good golf club, because I think it was a phenomenal product. But what I would say is this. So we had all just come back. Mark had just come back. I had just come back. And we're going to take this company from being sort of a weekend warrior lifestyle, almost a hacker brand, because TaylorMade was in bad shape then. You know, it wasn't making any money, didn't stand for anything. In 1999, there were 27 players paid to play the TaylorMade driver. Seven did. That means 20 guys were telling you that I'm going to forfeit my contract if you want me to, because I can't play with your stuff. That's when you know you have a product problem, right? But so we were, that's then 300 series came and all that stuff. And so we were going to reattach to the best players in the world and do all of this. And Tom Szymoski, who was running tour operations for us, came, and we had this club in Japan. He said, I just hit this thing. We got to bring this thing out. I said, Tommy, look at what that thing looks like. It's like a half moon looking thing. We're now going to try to be the best club for the best players in the world. And you want, I said, no, I won't let that go out on tour. Well, he snuck a few out there, and I'm at home that weekend, and I'm watching Pebble Beach, and here Tim Heron hits a beautiful tee shot just left of the tree on the 18th hole at Pebble, and he pulls the head cover off. And I go, you son of a... That's a rescue. And sure as day, he hits it right into the middle of the green. The next week, I think we had about 25 in play. We had a forecast to sell none, and I think we sold, I don't know how many, 300,000-400,000. And it was a club that really changed the world. But it really changed my thinking to be more open.
Did you ever expect them to be commonplace? I mean, they're in almost every tour bag now.
Well, as soon as it becomes in every tour bag or the tour players validate it, that's the recipe, right? If it's polarizing in the way it looks, certainly a white driver was that way. Spider putter was that way. A lot of the things that TaylorMade has done has been that way. And then the best players in the world validate it and say, it's in my bag because it's better, because that's why it would be there. Then all hell breaks loose in the marketplace. And that was the recipe for TaylorMade to grow from 270 to $1.75 billion. I mean, it's crazy. But that was it.
Now, you said you had a blunder for us.
Tour Burner driver was a driver that we were under immense pressure at the time to try to improve our margins. And, you know, so that was a driver that, you know, we tried to build a really good driver. And we tried to build one that actually would be a little bit more profitable for the company. And, you know, we tried to gussy it up a little bit and schmaltz it up a little here or there. And it just, it had about a 20-yard right tendency. We didn't do our best work. And I'll tell you, the marketplace is really clever. And Gary Adams has always told me this. Toulon, just remember one thing now that you're developing products. Products don't lie. Marketing guys can lie. Sales guys can lie. It can all, but especially today, Josh, I mean, there's launch monitors and it's all right there. So you're naked in front of the consumer, right? And the consumer finds things that work and they find things that don't. And that driver didn't work. And you know, we didn't do our best work there, and we got it handed to us. So that was a hell of a lesson for me, for sure.
Let's talk industry.
Yeah.
You were part of a small company, founded one.
Yeah.
Then you were part of meteoric rise as far as businesses go.
Yeah.
Now you're part of something a little different here with your family.
Yes.
Give us your take on the landscape of the golf industry, both large and small.
I think the golf industry is so maligned right now with negativity, you know, and it's...
The doom and gloom reporting when it's not all doom and gloom is tough.
I think it is, because I think it becomes almost self-fulfilling, right? And I think the game of golf is what it is. I definitely think the game of golf misses Tiger Woods. And yeah, there's an awesome crop of young, great players, but Tiger Woods was electric. And I mean, if you just watch the celebrations that he did, he was just cooler than all the other guys.
And he had everything going for him as far as what the world needed at the time.
Absolutely. So I think we miss, you know, an absolute positive superstar. Maybe Jason Day's going to be that guy. But Tiger also had the charisma and just, you know, the uppercut, it was just, I mean, it was so powerful.
I mean, the guy made mock turtlenecks cool. And that's hard to do.
He got me wearing them. Anyways, so I think we could use that. And I think there's great players and there's great young players, and that's only good. So I think that bodes well for what's coming behind. I think the whole Top Golf phenomenon is really cool, because that definitely is bringing people to the game in some ways. I think 70% of the people that go to a Top Golf aren't golfers, so some of that will stick. But the bottom line for what I do here at Toulon Design, or what the other companies do, there's about 1 million golfers in the U.S. that define themselves as, I am a golfer. And, you know, I don't collect cars, or I don't
usually
collect
go,
wine.
I am a golfer, but,
yeah,
you know, so.
but these guys they're super enthusiasts, right? And they want to buy new drivers and new putters and new wedges and things like that. So I think the game is fine. It got overbuilt a little bit. It's all that stuff is getting weeded out. But the game is what it is. It's a wonderful thing. I think it's great for young people. It's great for all people to play. You know we can play it forever, and we can have fun forever. And so I think the game is in a way better position than people are giving it credit to for.
Before we continue, I want to remind everybody that they can discuss these topics and all the topics on the THP forum with thousands of golfers every single day. And of course, you can follow, discuss, debate, and interact with Sean and his team on Twitter at Toulon Design. And if you include at THP Golf and the hashtag THP Radio, we'll include future questions if Sean decides he wants to come back on or invite us back to the studio.
Of course.
What has the startup of Toulon Design been like? As someone that likes to be heavily involved and heavily organized, and I'll call it chaotic like me.
Right.
What has this 6-month ride been like so far?
Well, it's been incredible. It's a team of four, plus now Kathy. So we've coerced Kathy, my wife, to come in and man the front desk, which is
before that, when you came in, you were greeted by you.
Yeah, or a dog.
Right. So now you're greeted by somebody more friendly.
Yeah, for sure.
So that's different.
It is. But, you know, you look around and we have to solve all of the problems and issues and things. And we have, because of my time at TaylorMade, I have, you know, many great resources that I can draw on, whether it's industrial design or graphic design or mechanical engineering or machine shops and things like that. So we've been able to put together just a group of people that are there to help us through issues and problems and challenges. But, you know, my dad taught me a long, long time ago. My dad was a great amateur race car driver. And he used to always say that people get in accidents, Sean, because they give up. Then they see the car is out of control, and they can see the wall approaching, and they take their hands off the wheel, and you get what you get. He said to me, and I'll never forget this, that until the moment of impact, you have options. Now, they may not all be good options, but you have options. And if you just have that mindset,
That's really good advice.
Until impact, there are things that you can do. And we just believe that there are things that you can do things better, different. But you can't do them by yourself. So we only talk about three things here. We talk about the importance of mentorship. And I've been so fortunate to have guys like Gary Adams and Jim Flick and Dick De La Cruz and so many other people be mentors to me in the business side of golf and learn from them. And obviously for me to help, you know, teach the guys here. Second part is collaboration, which is just a fancy word for saying good ideas and good thinking and creative thinking come from being curious and talking to others, right? And listening to what they have to say and making sure everybody has a viewpoint. And then the third thing, which I alluded to a little bit with the Tour Burner thing way back when, was just do right by the golfer. And the golfer will tell you if you're on track or not. And
it's a marvelous tool.
It's unbelievable, right? And forums like Hackers, I mean, the things, and I spend 3 hours a day on the forums just listening. And I do, though.
You need to get some more work done. I do, but I
also don't sleep well. So you can get a lot done from 4 to 7. But I just want to know what people are saying and thinking. And we got a lot of great ideas, things that we're not doing well or things that somebody else is doing really good that maybe we could do a little bit differently and maybe even better yet. So those are the three things that we really concentrate on. And that's what we do as a very small group of people here.
Yeah, I always learned that if you do right by the people around you, people will find a way to do business with people they like.
Well, that's it. Know, like, and trust, right?
Well, it's time for Fire Away.
All right. I think I'm ready.
So Sean's one of the few guests that hasn't asked for any of these questions up front. 10 topics. Okay. First thing that comes to your mind, yep. Nothing to do but with golf.
Okay.
Better food, West Coast or Midwest?
Oh, it's definitely the Midwest. Well, hold on. I just got to say one thing. When there was an ad once for a chain called Culver's, and they were advertising.
We know Culver's well where I live.
It's awesome. So they were advertising their new milkshake, and they said, there's more butter fat in this. There's enough butter fat in this baby to lube a tractor. So there you have it.
That's Midwest through and through, too. You work with your two sons and your wife.
Yes.
Who is the messiest one in the office?
Tony, for sure.
Hopefully Tony enjoys the show. During drive time, are you music or talk radio?
I am nothing. I am.
Me too.
Really?
Complete silence.
I know.
It drives my wife nuts.
I know, but I need it. And it allows my brain to go, you know, into different places.
Yes. I knew that there was a synergy there. That's not the only one, but what are the acceptable toppings allowed for a hot dog?
Chicago style. So definitely no ketchup.
I can't catch a break. I think I've had one guest that said ketchup was okay. What is the best sandwich and from where?
Well, I would say a bacon, lettuce, and tomato sandwich for sure on sourdough, and my wife makes it.
Good answer. Who are the worst fans? Packers fans or golf fans?
Golf fans. There isn't a bad Packer fan. There can't be. How could you be? But the knuckleheads that yell mashed potatoes and...
That's pretty bad.
It's come on, guys, really? You can do better. Please do better.
You've been to Wisconsin, right? You've been to the Packers fans.
Packer fans are awesome.
I'm struggling to get through this one, guys. You're a car guy.
I am.
You have your choice of any retail car from the 1980s.
Oh, my goodness.
What do you pick and why?
Boy, oh boy, any retail car.
We could have done
a
whole show on this, guys.
Yeah. I would say, any retail car, I would say, because I owned this car, a 1986 Porsche 944, which was not a barn burner for speed, but I thought it was breathtakingly beautiful at the time, and it was so easy to drive and fun to drive, and it wasn't crazy expensive. Believe it's a Porsche, so it's not... You know, it's not a Chevy Sonic. For sure.
You go DeLorean. I had a DeLorean there.
Yeah. No, I go Porsche 944.
You have a choice. You're at the airport.
Yeah.
You have an hour delay at the airport, but you get an upgrade.
Yeah.
Or you can leave on time, but you're the last seat on the plane in the middle.
Yeah.
Where do you go?
I leave on time 100 times out of 100. And I can tell you now that
you're a small guy, too. That middle seat's not terrible.
It does help. But now that I have to pay for my own airplane tickets, I sit in 52G back by the bathroom a lot more often than I used to, I can promise you.
You need to get some status with an airline here.
Yeah, it's okay.
You go to Madison.
Yes.
Back to Madison.
Yep.
What is the first thing you want to eat and from where?
The first thing that I want to eat back in Madison, there was a place called Gino's on State Street, his last name was Pepino, Gino Pepino. And
Poor guy.
Yeah, I know. And the chicken parm there was phenomenal. So I go back there for the chicken parm for sure.
And finally, your choice. Summers in Wisconsin or summers in San Diego, which one?
Summer in Wisconsin. It's home, you know, and you fight off the mosquitoes and all the other stuff. But when you're at home, you know, next to all your buddies and your family,
like George Hamilton next to those people.
And the beer just tastes a little bit better, and the brats are awesome, and you're there on the 4th of July. It's as good as it gets. There's nothing
like
home.
For those 3 weeks of summer.
That's about it. But I don't spend a lot of time back there in January anymore. But summertime in Wisconsin, it's magical.
There you have it, gang. We want to thank Sean for coming on the show and talking about his career, the future of Toulon Design, and, of course, the many zany questions in Fire Away. You can join us on the THP forum to discuss and debate everything you've heard here. And don't forget to follow along on Twitter at THP Golf and at Toulon Design and let us know your thoughts on the episode. Head over to iTunes, subscribe to the Hacker's Paradise so you never miss a new episode of the Golf Industry Uncut, The Dean Has Spoken, or our new show, On the Tee Box, and let us have a review with your thoughts on what your favorite show is. So for myself, and of course Sean, we hope you enjoyed this new episode. Bye, everybody.
THP Radio on the Hacker's Paradise Podcast Network. Your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.